members of the Congress, it is a privilege, and I deem it a high honor, to present to you a brave and courageous American, a hero in World War II and in the Korean conflict, who recently, in a most notable manner, added glory and prestige to our country, the first United States astronaut to have achieved orbital flight, Lieutenant Colonel John Herschel Glenn, United States Marine Corps. Colonel Glenn.
Mr. Speaker, Mr. President, members of the Congress, I am only too aware of the tremendous honor that's being shown us at this joint meeting of the Congress today. When I think of past meetings that involved heads of state and equally notable persons, I can only say that I am most humble to know that you consider our efforts to even be in the same class. This has been a great experience for all of us on the program and for all Americans, I guess, too. And I'm certainly glad to see that pride in our country and its accomplishments are not a thing of the past. I know I still get a real hard-to-define feeling down inside when the flag goes by, and I know all of you do, too. As we rode up Pennsylvania Avenue today from the White House and saw this tremendous outpouring of feeling on the part of so many thousands of people, I got that same feeling all over again, and let's hope that none of us ever lose it. The flight of Friendship 7 on the 20th of February certainly involved more than one man just in the spacecraft in orbit. I can think of many people that were involved in this, but I can think of none more than just a few sitting in the front row right up here. I'd like to have them stand up. If my parents would stand up, please, my dad and mother. My wife's mother is there. I don't believe Dr. Castor is there right now, but Mrs. Castor. I guess Dr. Castor is up there in the third row up, I'm told here. There he is. My son and daughter, Dave and Lynn. And the real rock in our family, my wife, Annie. I'm real proud of her. are many more people, of course, involved in our flight in Friendship 7. Many more things involved, too, as well as the people. There was the vision, of course, of Congress that established this national program of space exploration. Beyond that, many thousands of people were involved. Civilian contractors and subcontractors in many different fields, many elements, civilian, civil service, and military, all blending their efforts toward a common goal. To even attempt to give proper credit to all the individuals on this team effort would be impossible. But let me say that I have never seen a more sincere, dedicated, and hardworking group of people in my life. From the original vision of the Congress to consummation of this orbital flight has been just over 3 years. This in itself states eloquently the case for the hard work and devotion of the entire Mercury team. This has not been just another job to those of us on the project. It's been a dedicated labor such as I have not seen before. It has involved a crosscut of American endeavor with many different disciplines cooperating toward a common objective. Friendship 7, though, is just a beginning, a successful experiment. It is another plateau in our step-by-step program of increasingly ambitious flights. The earlier flights of Alan Shepard and Gus Grissom, who are over here, were stepping stones. Their efforts were stepping stones toward my flight in Friendship 7, and my flight in that spacecraft will in turn provide additional information for use in striving toward future flights that some of the other gentlemen you see here will take part in. Scott Carpenter here, who was my backup on this flight, Wally Schirra next to him, and Deke Slayton, and our one missing member who is still on his way back from Australia where he was on the tracking station, Gordon Cooper. A lot of direction is necessary for a project such as this, and the director of Project Mercury since its inception has been Dr. Robert Gilruth, who certainly deserves a hand here. Bob? I had planned to introduce Walt Williams. I don't see him right here. Where is Walt?
Up with your family.
I don't see him. There he is, up in the corner. As well as being Associate Director of Project Mercury, Walt has the unenviable position of being the Operations Director. And he's the character, no matter how you look at him, who says, hold the count occasionally in the poor weather and one thing and another. Well, with all the experience we have had so far, where does this leave us? We have, I guess these are the building blocks of one which we shall build much more ambitious and more productive portions of the program. As was to be expected, not everything worked perfectly on my flight. We may well need to make changes, but these will be tried out on subsequent 3-orbit flights later this year, to be followed by 18-orbit 24-hour missions. Beyond that, we look forward at the moment to Project Gemini, a 2-man orbital vehicle with greatly increased capability for advanced experiments. There will be additional rendezvous experiments in space, technical and scientific observations, then Apollo orbital, circumlunar, and finally lunar landing flights. What did we learn from Friendship 7 flight that will help us attain these objectives? Some specific items have already been covered briefly in the news reports. And I think it is of more than passing interest to all of us that information obtained from these flights is readily available to all nations of the world. The launch itself was conducted openly and with the news media representatives from around the world in attendance. Complete information on our project is released as it is evaluated and validated. This is certainly in sharp contrast with similar programs conducted elsewhere in the world and elevates the peaceful intent of our program. Data from the Friendship 7 flight are still being analyzed. Certainly much more information will be added to our storehouse of knowledge. But these things we know, the Mercury spacecraft and systems design concepts, are sound and have now been verified during manned flight in space. We also proved that man can operate intelligently in space and can adapt rapidly to this new environment. Zero-G, or weightlessness, at least for this period of time that we're talking about, appears to be no problem. As a matter of fact, lack of gravity is a rather fascinating thing. Objects in the cockpit can be parked in midair, for instance. For example, at one time during the flight, I was using a small handheld camera. Another system needed attention at that particular moment as I started to take a picture, so it seemed quite natural, and I had adapted to this rapidly enough that it seemed quite natural to park the camera here in the air, go ahead and do what I wanted, and then take up the camera again and go on about the business. It's a real fascinating field, needless to say. There seemed to be little sensation of speed, although the craft was traveling at about 5 miles per second. A speed that I, too, find very difficult to comprehend. In addition to closely monitoring onboard systems, we were able to make numerous outside observations. The view from that altitude defies description. I had listened earlier to Al and Gus both describe this and was eagerly looking forward to it, and in their wildest use of adjectives, they didn't describe what it's like even, nor can I describe it. The horizon colors are brilliant, and the sunsets are very spectacular. And it's hard to beat a day in which you're permitted the luxury of seeing 4 sunsets. I think after all of our talk about space, though, this morning coming up from Florida on the plane with President Kennedy, we had the opportunity to meet Mrs. Kennedy and Caroline before we took off. I think Caroline really cut us down to size and put us back in our proper position, though, when after being introduced, she looked up and said, "Where's the monkey?" Listen, I didn't get a banana pellet on the whole ride. Seriously, though, I feel we're on the brink of an area of expansion, of knowledge about ourselves and our surroundings that is beyond description or comprehension at this time. Our efforts today and what we've done so far are but small building blocks on a very huge pyramid to come. Questions are sometimes raised regarding the immediate payoffs from our efforts. What benefits are we gaining from the money spent? Well, the real benefits we probably cannot even detail. They're probably not even known to man today. But exploration and the pursuit of knowledge have always paid dividends in the long run, usually far greater than anything expected at the outset. Experimenters with common gray mold little dreamed of the effect their discovery of penicillin would have. The story has been told of Disraeli, Prime Minister of England at the time, visiting the laboratory of Faraday, one of the early experimenters with basic electrical principles. After viewing various demonstrations of electrical phenomena, Disraeli asked, "But of what possible use is it?" And Faraday replied, "Mr. Prime Minister, what good is a baby?" That is the stage of development in our program today, in its infancy. And it indicates a much broader potential impact, of course, than even the discovery of electricity did. We are just probing the surface of the greatest advancements in man's knowledge of his surroundings that has ever been made, I feel. There are benefits to science across the board. Any major effort such as this results in research by so many different specialties that it's hard to even envision the benefits that will accrue in many fields. Knowledge begets knowledge. The more I see, the more impressed I am not with how much we know, but with how tremendous the areas are that are as yet unexplored. Exploration, knowledge, and achievement are good only insofar as we apply them to our future actions. Progress never stops. We're now on the verge of a new era, I feel. Today, I know that I seem to be standing alone on this great platform. Just as I seem to be alone in the cockpit of the Friendship 7 spacecraft. But I'm not. There were with me then and with me now thousands of Americans and many hundreds of citizens of many countries around the world who contributed to this truly international undertaking voluntarily and in a spirit of cooperation and understanding. On behalf of all those people, I would like to express my and their heartfelt thanks for the honors you have bestowed upon us here today. We are all proud to have been privileged to be part of this effort to represent our country as we have. As our knowledge of this universe in which we live increases, may God grant us the wisdom and guidance to use it wisely. Thank you.
You have been listening to Lieutenant Colonel John Glenn as he addressed a joint session of the United States Congress. Colonel Glenn is acknowledging the applause of the members of Congress and of those who are standing and applauding in the visitors' gallery. This broadcast has originated at the United States House of Representatives.